The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness, even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness. All
aboard! Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 66. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here. With me, Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, Victor. I'm good as always, bud. Happy to have the draft and free agency behind us and kind of sliding into the slower stages of summer there. Get some time off with the fam and stuff.
Yeah, good time to get some R&R to hang out with family.
It's a slow time for me at work, too. So I think you're the opposite, though. I think your work is just about bonkers right now. So the reprieve in hockey might be good timing for you.
Yeah. It's going to be a busy time. The med students start next week, so it's a lot to get ready for. But it's all good. We are here. We're going to talk about, we'll continue our conversation about the organizational ranks that we talked about last episode. So we're going to talk about teams ranked 27th through 22nd. Plenty of good stuff to talk about here. Before we do that, we want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for many great hockey podcasts. You can use the DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager. For any dynasty sport you play, it is completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, scoring categories, amazing draft room, and a great treasury option. I must say, I say this all the time, I'm going to say something a little different here right now. Over at Fantasy Hockey Life, we're going through our tier dynasty, which is a very complicated league. There is no other place that you could do this other than on Fantrax. A lot of teams moving around, a lot of players moving around, a lot of very personalized settings, and that's what I love about Fantrax. You can do anything you want there, and if you want a free link to sign up for a league, you can use fantrax.com/DPR show. And with that, let's get on with it, Pete.
Yeah, so last episode, like you said, we are continuing on with our organizational prospect rankings, a series of articles that were released at Dauber Prospects with contribution from a number of writers. I think about 10 guys contributed to it. And so just a little bit of context here, we had everybody do their top 15 prospects for each team and gave each player a number value between 1 and 10. And then you added all those numbers up and that gave you your team's overall ranking score, which helped organize the rankings. And so we're going to go through that with a little bit more of a fine-tooth comb on these episodes here and talk about some of the players that had either differences in rankings between Victor and myself, and we can battle to the death on those scores, or we can talk about players that just had a wide range of rank between all the writers, even if Victor and I agreed some other people maybe didn't, were higher or lower on some guys. Then the number grades we're talking about are a scale from 1 to 10, and a 10 being like a Connor Bedard, and a 1 being like a beer leaguer, and a 5 being like a 50-50 to make it to the NHL, let alone be good, right? If you're talking about a player who's likely to make it, but might not be great, would be anywhere probably between a 5 and 7. And then a 7, 8, and 9 are players that are going to be, full-time, long career, top six players, all stars, fantasy, really fantasy relevant players. They need to be about a seven to be a fantasy relevant in most formats. And then there's some other formats that, you know, deep, deep dynasty leagues that are full 32 teams with a full, you know, 50 roster NHL and prospect, where, you know, guys who are threes and fours are still fantasy relevant in those leagues because they got a chance. They get a chance. And that's all you can hope for with some of these guys. So that's just a quick context recap and get you caught up. If you missed the episode previous, we counted down from 32 to 28. And we're picking up now where we left off last time at 27. And that is Pittsburgh Penguins. They are ranked 27th overall in the prospect organizational rankings. First guy we're going to talk about, we got a couple Russians from Pittsburgh that we're going to hit on. And the first guy is Sergei Mureshov. His average score was 3.2. Pretty low. He was the ninth ranked prospect on the Penguins. So that gives you an indication of how shallow Pittsburgh's prospect pool is. I didn't rank him. He wasn't on my radar. Victor ranked him at six. Whew, that's lofty. What he was is a fourth round pick for the Penguins in 2024. He's a goaltender, for anyone who didn't know. He's 6 foot two. So he's got decent size. He's only got three career games in the KHL. He's a 20-year-old goalie now, and he's played the bulk of his career in the MHL. And he's got a record of 73, 30, and 12 with a 204 goals against and a 934 save percentage. So quite a polarizing player here on the rankings. He's also not ranked at all by Curtis, and he only scored two or three by Dauber and Aaron Itovich and Hayden. But Victor had him at a six, and he wasn't on an island there. Panit had him at a four. And Pat, Ben, and Mark had him at five. So anywhere from zero to six is a wide range. So clearly, Victor, I'm missing something on this guy. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I've never really heard of him. I have no file on this player. So fill me in on what we need to know.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some interesting things here. He is a goalie. So I feel like there's a lot more volatility as usual. So that's important. He's also a Euro goalie, which if you look at just like trends and who makes it and who doesn't, Euro goalies tend to make it at a far higher clip, especially in the last 15, 20 years than North American goalies. So I think that's really important to keep in mind. He also has very limited KHL action, as you alluded to, seven games. Of course, he needs a lot more to know. And so we don't really know, but he's looked great at that level. And Lokomotiv is a very strong team and he killed it for them. So, I mean, you could say maybe it's just the system, and that's true. Maybe it is. Sometimes it's harder to go down to the MHL and post up good numbers because some of the teams and leagues in that league are a little bit challenging, but he's already done really well there. He was drafted at 6 foot, and that might have been part of the low draft stock, but he's 6'2", as you mentioned. So, you know, closer to average NHL goalie size, maybe a little bit under, but definitely not like super undersized at 6'2". And I think his equivalency has really, you know, looked pretty good. He, you know, it's always helpful to see, like, does he look like anyone who's been in the league? Nick Backstrom, not the skater, but the goalie, Nick Backstrom is someone he looks a little bit like in the hockey prospecting model. So I think that's kind of interesting. And I do think there's a lot to this idea that goalies who get pro level shots at an earlier stage have a bit of an advantage, which is something that you're just not going to see for North American goalies, just the way that the agreements with the CHL and even the American kids, you know, don't really get a chance to see that unless they go abroad. So I think that can make a difference. I don't know that he's going to be incredible, but, you know, I think when you look at the rest of the system there, I think there's some reason potentially to have some optimism. You know, you have Jaeger at the top, Owen Pickering, Joel Blomqvist. Those guys have a pretty good chance of being contributors. And then Pustin and Poulin, Matthew Phillips, another guy we'll talk about, and Hollander. You know, there's not a whole lot of certainty there. And who knows what the state of the Penguins will be in when Mureshov gets there, but he certainly seems like a reasonable option for someone to have some interest in. And I think if you have never heard of him or don't know you know, anything and he's available, he might be worth an add in a deep enough league. You know, he definitely needs a little bit more time, as we said, but I think there's some upside there.
Well, that's interesting. So another thing you said in there that was interesting, I kind of want to elaborate on, is you mentioned how stats at lower levels for goalies can sometimes be a little bit misleading if they're not amazing. And I kind of agree with that. And a lot of the reason why is as you move up the food chain into the higher levels of hockey, like, yes, of course, the quality of the shooters significantly improves, but also so does the defense. I mean, you watch some East Coast Hockey League games or USHL or CHL games, and you see, you know, in zone plays where there's a guy standing at the side of the net uncontested, and then you can't blame the goalie when the puck comes right to his stick at 80 miles an hour and he just taps it in the empty net before the goalie can have time to react. Or you see a game where there's multiple breakaways and two-on-ones, you know, really premium scoring chances. So those sort of opportunities become a lot harder to come by at the higher level of hockey. And it can benefit a good goalie on a good defensive team. All right. So the other Russian that I alluded to that we want to talk about here is Mikhail Ilyin. He's a forward. And his average score was 3.7, so slightly better than Murashov's. He's the seventh ranked prospect. I did rank this guy. I ranked him a 4, but Victor, you were a little higher on him than me. You're giving him a score of 6, so I think he's got, you know, a little bit of work to do to make it to the NHL, and you think he maybe just needs a little bit of time. I'm not sure. We'll get your thoughts on him. He was a 5th-round pick by the Penguins in 2023. And he has played 69 KHL games as a 19-year-old and has 29 points in that span. And he had 4 more points in 5 playoff games as well to end the season. So that's pretty impressive. You're a little bit more bullish. We're both actually a little bit more bullish than the other writers. Pat didn't have him ranked. Ben had him at 2. Aaron had him at 3. And the other higher scores were a 5 from Dauber and Mark. So you love to see 19-year-old players that are good enough to play in the KHL, which is not a developmental league, right? Like they don't play 19-year-olds and 18-year-olds unless they can, you know, have some sort of contribution. And even then, they sometimes are played very sparingly in a lot of games, like 1 minute of ice time. The other thing I like about him is, yeah, he's 19. Obviously, he played because he produced really well. But he's also only got 1 year remaining on his contract through this season. So he could technically be coming over to North America as soon as next year as a 20-year-old. So the wait time and the incubation period on this player might be kind of short because there's not a lot of prospect roster competition for him to move up the ranks rather quickly in Pittsburgh. So if he came over, has another really good season in the KHL next year, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the American Hockey League next season, and then, you know, having a cup of coffee or challenging for an NHL job is as soon as next year. You know, he's only got a 19% rostership on Fantrax, so this could be a really good sneaky fantasy ad in a lot of leagues. Victor, you're even more excited about this guy than I am. You're a little bit more optimistic on him. I think you gave him the highest score overall. Love to get your 2 cents on him.
Yeah, thanks. I think you laid it out really well there. He did play in his draft season in the KHL, but he didn't really score. He had 21 games and just 2 assists, but he was almost a point per game in the MHL for one of the not so good teams. So I think that context is really important. Like you kind of wonder, like, all right, why was this guy drafted in the 5th round? Well, he's not small. He's 6 feet. You know, he moves okay. He's got some pretty good skill, but he's Russian and he didn't really score a lot in the KHL, even though he played a lot of games. So there's not a lot of events, you know, to really go by. And so it's like, okay, last year I was kind of interested in him based on his MHL production, but just kind of like wait and see. Well, like you said, he really popped off in the KHL this season. And so you love to see that kind of bump in your D+1 is something that bodes really well, especially when you do that as a teenager, which he did. I mean, he was 18 for most of the KHL season, which starts much earlier than the NHL season. And he's a February 15th birthday. So, which isn't super late or anything, but he was 18 for most of that. And so that was that was really good to see. You know, he really jumped up his PNHLE from the teens up to, you know, 60. So I'm not saying this guy's going to be amazing, but that kind of aligns with the rank. Okay, 60-point-ish, like, seems pretty reasonable. He's already playing professional hockey. Like you said, he can come over pretty soon. All those things are pluses. I was looking at hockey prospecting, too, and trying to find some reasonable comps for him. And even though Valeri Nichushkin is much bigger, he kind of had a similar production in the MHL, KHL. So, you know, that might be a somewhat reasonable comp, maybe a little bit too optimistic, but something in that realm. You know, not anyone's going to blow the doors off. The other thing I really like to look at is the FHL player cards. And one thing you can see from Ilan is that he does not really do much in the peripheral categories. He doesn't really shoot, hit, or he actually blocks a close to an average amount. But these are based on his KHL numbers. In his MHL sample size, it was a bit different. So I think he could do more. But what you do see in his KHL sample is that even though he may not be providing all that peripheral, he's actually driving play really well. Even at a really difficult league, he's getting to the high danger areas. He's really battling for pucks. So even though some of the perps don't look that exciting, overall, it looks like he's performing really well, even if he isn't scoring, you know, as much as you might like, although how close to half point per game is really good. But it almost seems like his underlying numbers suggest he deserves even more, which is another reason to be a little bit excited about him.
Right. So that wraps up all the guys we're going to deep dive in on Pittsburgh. Their average score was about 54. They only had three players exceed a six, and that was Braden Yeager, Owen Pickering, and Joel Blomqvist. So forward, a defenseman, and a goalie. That's nice. Then you got a couple of journeymans with Valtteri Puustinen and Matthew Phillips, a couple replacement players. Now we're in the sub four overall ranking score. And then you've got Ilian, Helander, Murashov, Samuel Poulin, Jack Rathbone. So a couple of guys who are looking like busts in there. Tristan Braz, who this time next year, he might be north of four. He's a player I'm kind of interested in. Zamplant, and then some other guys you probably never heard of. All right, so that's Pittsburgh. Let's put a bow on them. Let's move out west and talk about team number 26, the Vancouver Canucks. And the first guy we're going to hit on there is Tom, I believe you, Willander, but I think it's Villander is the way you pronounce his name. Yeah, we learned that at the draft. He scored a 6.7. He's their second ranked prospect overall. I boosted the stats a little bit there, giving him a 7, and you brought him down a little bit, giving him a 5. He was picked in 2023 in the first round early, 11th overall. So he's got some draft pedigree backing him up. And he is a 6'1", 180-pound right-hand shot defenseman. He went from Rogel to BU in the NCAA, so you know I like him. Of the other writers, a couple guys also scored him at a 7. There was an 8 and a 5 in there. So between 5 and 8 is a pretty tight cluster overall. Everyone thinks he's going to be an NHL player, pretty much is what that tells me. For me, 7 is more of an indication that I'm highly certain that he's going to be an NHL player. I've got very little doubt that he is trending towards the direction of playing in the NHL. What keeps his score down any lower than a 7 is question marks come in about his fantasy upside. He did produce pretty well for BU, playing top pairing minutes, played a lot of minutes for the Terriers. And he had 25 points in 38 games. Now, of course, Boston had some pretty nice players for him to pass the puck up to up the ice and do some of the heavy lifting for him. He just had to get them the puck. But he also worked on the power play as well. And I was impressed with what I saw from him. He also represented Sweden at the World Junior Championships as well. Put up 3 points in 7 games there, which, you know, again, he's a defenseman. So that's pretty decent production. You know, that tells me that he's not totally devoid of offensive upside. So that kind of is the rationale behind my ranking him a 7. Victor, you scored him at a 5. What's your take on Villander?
Well, basically, I agree with everything you said. You said you based a lot of this on how certain you are for him to be an NHLer. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with that. And yeah, I also agree with the other thing you said, which is about his fantasy impact. And I think that's kind of just where I leaned a little bit, was more on the, the five was more based on his, my skepticism of him being a big fantasy impact contributor, because I agree, he's going to be a big time player. He's going to absolutely he's incredible. He's a really good defensive defenseman. But I don't know that he's going to bring a lot offensively. We have seen him a little bit in that role. And as you mentioned, what he did at BU, I mean, he was basically stable to Lane Hudson. And, you know, that's going to help you get a little bit more points. And I think he has, you know, it's not just like, that's not a knock on him. Like, I think you have to be a really good player to play with another really, you know, creative, risk-taking player like Lane Hudson. And I think he does it really, really well. And I think he could be a future, you know, he could be the future pair of someone, you know, like Quinn Hughes. And I think that's maybe the ideal situation. Like, yeah, he could be that kind of guy and, you know, get a lot of points by osmosis. So I like Velander a lot. I think he's someone that I would definitely like to have in real life. In fantasy, though, I'm just not sure, especially because, you know, then you're looking like, okay, if he's not going to score a ton, is he going to bash? And he kind of doesn't. Like, he doesn't really shoot. He hits like an average amount. He blocks like an average amount. So he's going to kind of be like probably below replacement level in terms of the perifs. And then, you know, but the play driving and everything else should be really, really good. It's kind of just a matter of how many points he gets from osmosis. And those are kind of difficult players to want to hold. Like, you're basically holding them, assuming that they're going to get, you know, contributions from other players. And so that's you never want to pick those third wheels per se. But I really, really like him. And my score is just based on the fantasy outlook more than the certainty. I pulled up some hockey prospecting comps here, and most of them are not very good based on his production. But Jeff Petrie, aside from the, like, Jeff Petrie without the perifs is you know, maybe kind of like best case scenario for Velander, according to this metric. The PNHLE for him looks a little bit better. You know, he's kind of, I know Mason put some boost to defensive scoring, but it has him at a 60, which probably means he's more like a 50, you know, 55 at most kind of guy. But yeah, overall, I think that's what I think about Velander.
Yeah, I'm getting some OEL vibes from him, right? You remember when OEL was younger and a prospect, and you know, he was a really highly regarded ranked prospect, and everyone thought he was going to be a really great player. And he's had a good NHL career, but it just hasn't really materialized at a very tangible level for fantasy hockey. And yeah, I think that's kind of what we might be looking at here. A guy that's in the league for a long time, but if he's your first or second best offensive defenseman, you might be up the creek.
He's not an offensive defenseman, I think.
Right.
Is kind of what I would say. I agree with that. That might even be too optimistic, Pete. OEL, because OEL had some pretty good producing seasons, and I'm just not sure Velander ever really gets there. But
well, yes. If you ride shotgun with Quinn Hughes, that could work out just fine.
Yeah, I mean, you could get 50, 60 points just by standing there, tapping the puck to Quinn Hughes.
Right. All right, let's move on from him and let's talk about another Canuck, Atu Ratti. Is that how we're saying his name these days? Ratti or Ratu?
It's Atu Ratu.
Atu Ratu, thank you. So he scored an average of 6, and that made him the third highest ranked prospect on the Canucks. I scored him a 7. Victor scored him a 5. He was picked in 2021 in the second round by the Islanders. If you remember it, the year prior to his draft season, D-1, I think it was Joakim Nevalainen that was on the podcast, and he said that he could be the first Finnish player to go first overall. Well, his draft stock fell pretty hard, and that didn't happen. But that goes to tell you the kind of pedigree that he had at one point. He's a 6'2", 187-pound forward. But I'll let you lead up on Ratti. So you know how to pronounce his name better than I do, Victor. Go ahead.
That's the bar that we keep here. Yeah, I can pronounce his name.
If you can pronounce his name, you get first dibs.
Yeah, you know, he's been so up and down that it's been hard. Although you kind of mentioned some of it, and it was even more than that too, because yeah, in the draft, pre-draft season, he was like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. And then his stock kept sinking and sinking. And then it got a little ridiculous with how far it sank. I mean, in his draft season, Basically, he scored 21 points, where he scored almost as many points in his draft minus one in 12 games than he did in his draft season, playing nearly three times as many games. So you look at that and you're just like, oh my God, what happened? This is terrible. But, you know, the team and context situation was a bit different for him, or was expected from him. And then he went to his draft plus one season and, you know, he switched teams and looked really good. And it's like, okay, great. Things are hunky dory, back on track. And then he came to North America and things were a little bit off. Initially, they tried to put him right in the NHL and that was kind of difficult. Then he went to Bridgeport. And then eventually he got traded. Finally, this past season, he spent the entire season with one organization, which he had never done. He had been up and down between the U20 and the Liga team, or the AHL, NHL, or between two different AHL organizations. And so I think that continuity really helped him. 52 points in 72 games in the AHL is really, really good. And I think the thing about him that still kind of, I'm just not sure. I mean, my score is kind of like, I'm not sure, basically, because you see him do some things and he's really good at it. Like, he's really good at protecting the puck. He's really good. Like, he's got some soft hands and he can make some really skilled plays, but he also like is kind of slow sometimes at getting to the right spot. And so that makes me a little bit worried. I was so curious about him. I went back and watched a bunch of games, 'cause I was just like, am I missing something here? And I think what I saw was more of the same, like some really good and some really like, some questions. Like, I think he's going to struggle with the pace of the NHL, and I think that's going to be a bit harsh for him. But I do think that there's some upside, and they put him in the right situation in the right context, which I think the Canucks have done a pretty good job of that recently. I think he could be really good, and I think he could flourish in that system. So I think probably would be a little bit higher after doing some secondary research. But you look at the hockey prospecting and it's awful. I mean, he had 0%. Like, you rarely see 0%, especially for someone to draft in the second round. But I think that's kind of misleading because of some of his draft season production. His PNHL has wandered up and down crazily. It's really kind of difficult. But right now he's like 52 point pace. And then you look at some of his periffs, and one thing that's true about Ratu is that he hits a lot. So you can get some peripheral value. He's very physical. And so that part's really nice. But some of his other things, like his play driving is pretty good, but some of his bringing pucks to the middle and puck work is a little bit lacking. So I don't know, Pete, he still kind of baffles me a little bit. I can see the appeal and I could see it working out, but I also feel like there's a bit of a risk to just kind of be a tweener there. What do you think about him?
If I'm not mistaken, Victor, you traded him to me in the DPFHL, didn't you? I think you did.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think we made that trade. It was a bigger trade. He was one of the pieces, though. So that makes sense that I'm higher on him than you are. Yeah, although I'm not convinced with this player. I like the potential, but I'm not convinced. His development has been up and down, but it's been slow. Overall, I think he's trending in the right direction. I think, you know, last year's performance in the American Hockey League, with the consistency of playing with one team, probably, you know, similar line mates all season in one system. And I think we saw the benefit of that in his development. Now, what are we looking at in the future? I think for this season, I don't think he's going to crack the Canucks roster. If you look at their contract situation, there isn't really a spot for him there as a 21-year-old. And that's not the end of the world. That's okay. It is the last year of his entry-level contract, though, right? So he's going to be a restricted free agent after the season. They're going to have to qualify him and then make him probably a better contract offer, depending on what he does this season. To that point, he's going to have a pretty dominant season in the American Hockey League in order for him to be qualifying offer worthy. Like, I think it's the point now where you need to see some stronger promise than what we've seen so far. He's got to move the needle firmly in the right direction in order for him to get a contract and then play his way into the roster next season. So that's kind of where I am on him. Does that mean that a 7 is too high because there's a lot of uncertainty there, or is it kind of just right? You know, we're counting on him to deliver this season, and then make it into the NHL next season. I guess time will tell. But that's enough on Atu Ratu. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
All right, we're going to go to Vegas, and they are number 25. They've got some pretty decent prospects. You know, a lot of them have been traded away, but Brendan Brisson, Pavel Dorofeev are two guys at the top there. Then Lucas Cormier is right behind them. So the top three were pretty much in agreement. There was just maybe some slight on Cormier, but didn't know that it was worth talking about. But the fourth prospect is the guy that we're going to talk about, and that's Ivan Morozov. He had an average of 5.3 across the board between all the different rankers. And you had him at a 5. I had him at a 6. So wasn't really that much different. But Dauber has him at a 7, Puneet at a 4, Mark a 4.5. So there was a bit of discrepancy there. So I thought it might be worth discussing. Plus, I think there's some other interesting tidbits that are probably worth mentioning. First, he was a 2018 second round pick, 6'1", 196 pounds. He was on loan back to the KHL last season after spending 2022-23 with the Henderson Silver Knights and having a pretty modest production, 17 points in 58 games. And then he went over a point per game in the KHL, which, of course, made a lot of people a little bit more interested in him, right? Like, okay, this guy, maybe he's got some excitement back in his profile. He's 24, so he's kind of like right in his peak. I think the big question here is I'm not really sure that he is going to come back or if there are any plans for him to come back. I talked to a couple people who are in touch with Russian hockey, and it doesn't sound like there's any plans for Spartak Moskva to let him go. And so it seems like he might just be back there. We're going to find out pretty soon, though, because he's currently an RFA, and Vegas is going to have to decide if they're going to offer him a contract and loan him out or what they're going to do. But that's going to probably dictate a lot. It seems like you might have some update on that, Pete. But looking at his PNHL, he's kind of gone up and down, but spiked back up to close to 60, which would make him pretty interesting if he did indeed come over. What do you think?
Yeah, he signed a 2-year contract in the KHL, so that's pretty much changed my rating from a 5 to a 3. I don't really have any interest in him anymore.
Yep, that's pretty fair. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the issue. And people were asking me all season, and I was trying to find out because he was killing in the KHL. But I just don't think it's going to be an option. So unless you have KHL fantasy stats, then I wouldn't worry about Ivan Morozov.
Time to drop him.
Let's move on to the next guy, Grigory Denisenko. I feel like I've been talking about Denisenko forever, Pete. Don't you think?
As a yes, writing about him for 10 years, it seems.
So he was an average of 4.6. He was number 6 on the list. The only guy between Morozov and him was Matthew Cataford. And anyways, we're going to talk about him. But you had him at a 7. I had him at a 4. He was a 2018 15th overall pick by Florida, 5'11", 196 pounds. He played 6 NHL games last season for the Golden Knights. It didn't go particularly well. Most of his impacts, his Corsi against and for were pretty low. He kind of got caved in a little bit, but his AHL production overall has been great. 56 points in 65 games last season. He's 24 years old. I think my issue is that he's had several opportunities between Florida and Vegas to get a hold of an opportunity, and he hasn't really received it. He had 7 games back in 2020-21, just 1 game the season after, and then 18 games 2022-23 when Florida was trying to figure out what the heck to do with him. They let him go, and then Vegas gave him 6 games this season, and he hasn't really done anything with it, which is kind of what worries me. And you know what I know about him is he's kind of an undersized, very crafty, skilled playmaking, you know, winger type, but he doesn't really engage physically. He doesn't really drive too much in the middle. And so he kind of gets pushed around, and, you know, he kind of, he doesn't play with as much pace. And sometimes, you know, the way that you need to be successful in the NHL. So I'm just not sure that it's ever going to happen for him. Pete, what do you think about Denisenko?
Yeah, you're kind of swinging my opinion here. You know, I like the draft pedigree, and I watch him play and I see the skill. I look at his American Hockey League stats and I'm like, yeah, this guy's coming. A little late, better late than never. I'm reading the tea leaves here. Time's not on his side, right? He hasn't made the Knights roster or really, quite frankly, come close to playing his way onto the roster yet, despite the fact that he's played really well in Henderson and is producing in the American Hockey League. So reading the tea leaves, I see another good season in the American Hockey League coming up for him and probably getting a cup of coffee in the National Hockey League. If, you know, what are the chances Mark Stone gets injured? Maybe there's an opportunity for him there. But I just don't see him playing so well at the National Hockey League level where he earns another contract and a top six roster spot, because the way we talked about him just a second ago there, like, he's skilled, but he doesn't play with a super high pace. He's not very physical. So if he's not putting up about a point a game production, he's not in your top six. And if he's not in your top six, then he doesn't bring any of the other intangibles really that make a valuable bottom six player. So I could see him signing a KHL contract at the conclusion of this season. So, you know, he's 34% rostered in Fantrax. And if you're part of that group, my advice is this would be a really good time to sell stock on Grigory Denisenko.
Yeah, or like several years ago.
If you had him. If you had him and you sold him then, good job. If you still own him, it's not too late to sell.
It might be, but get whatever you can. Yeah, yes. I don't think much is going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next team. That's Ottawa. And Ottawa is number 24. And we looked at a bunch of the things here. So I'll just go over some of the players that they have. They have Ridly Greig, who's clearly, I mean, he's going to graduate from this list pretty soon. He's clearly an NHLer. Matt Sogard looks like he might be a pretty, you know, decent goalie, or at least a backup 1B kind of thing. We also had Roby Gervente, but he's now in Edmonton. And Jacob Bernard-Docker, Levi Marilainen, Zach Ostapchuk, Igor Sokolov, who also left. So a lot of these guys we kind of either agreed on or just really aren't that interesting. Tyler Boucher, we all kind of agreed, we're pretty out on him. Don't really see much upside there. But the one guy who we definitely disagreed on, not necessarily you and I, because we were kind of in line, but a lot of the other people disagreed with Tyler Cleven. And so I figure it's probably worth mentioning him because he also was a pretty reasonably high draft pick that there are a lot of people probably holding him. And that's what we're trying to do here, give some advice on what the heck to do with these guys. So Tyler Cleven, he was a 2020 44th overall pick by Ottawa. I believe, if I remember correctly, they also traded a couple picks to move up to get him. I think that was with the Leafs. Anyways, he's an average of a 4.8 on our, oh, I should also mention he's a 6'4", 201-pound left-handed D. He's a 4.8 average on our list. Well, now he's fourth. He was fifth with Gervente gone. Pete, you had him at a 6. I had him at a 5. Dauber has him at a 3. Ben at a 2. So some are even way more pessimistic. And Puneet and Pat are also with you at 6. And then a few others are with me at 5. 21 points in 53 games for Belleville of the AHL. He got 9 NHL games, which, you know, he kind of looked average, you know, kind of around replacement level, which for your first 9 NHL games is not bad. Average defensively, had some pretty somewhat positive offensive impacts. And overall, you know, he didn't really have enough time to show what he can do, but he is someone who should be able to bring some peripheral value. If you look at his Fantasy Hockey Life card, you can see that he shoots, hits, and blocks a fair amount, a little bit above average. So if he can contribute anything scoring wise, he'll be a little bit above replacement level. But I don't think that's going to be too exciting. His hockey prospecting shows his likelihood of being a top producer is pretty low. He kind of looks a lot like Josh Manson, and I think that's probably a reasonable comparable for him because I do think that he's someone who's going to play. He's going to play in the NHL. He has the size, the mobility, the physicality. He's going to play. And that's kind of where my ranking is. Like, I think he's pretty likely to play, but I think he's going to be a pretty boring, if not, you know, replacement level option. And so that's that's kind of where I'm at on Tyler Kleven. If you're in a league that really rewards just getting ice time and having reasonable periffs, then I think it's fine. But if you're really looking for some scoring or, you know, reasonable amount of, you know, peripheral coverage, then I think it might be, you might want to look somewhere else. What do you think about Tyler Kleven, Pete?
I like him. I go to Belleville games as often as I can, several times a season, and he quickly became the BSN's top defender when joining them last season. And I think he looks NHL ready now. Like, he really influenced and controlled the game at a level that no other player in Belleville has. And I think a lot of the reason why we're so poo-poo on their prospect pool is because it's really depleted. They've graduated quite a few players, and a lot of good players have come through Belleville and are in the NHL over the last couple seasons now. So it's kind of no wonder that they're so depleted. Although most of the teams in the lower spectrum of the rankings here are a lot more legit contenders or have made it to the finals or have won Stanley Cups recently. And so Ottawa is pretty far removed from any sort of playoff success, but hopefully it's coming. And because they've graduated all their prospects and they're on the roster now. So we'll see if that catches up. But back to Kleven. So the tagline on this player is he's a big physical defensive defenseman. And that just doesn't translate to fantasy hockey very well. So I think that explains the twos and the three rankings where people have a bias about that description of this player. And they're not completely wrong. To your point, he's not a prolific offensive player. I said he influences and controls the game. He does that, but not from a dynamic offensive point of view. He just settles things down quite nicely. He disrupts plays in the defensive zone from the offense, and he makes very, very calm, cool, calculated plays. He's just very stabilizing player. Not very dynamic offensive, but he's got a cannon of a shot. I mean, you put him on the power play on the point and pass him the puck, and if he's got a lane, he can let her rip. So there is some offensive upside with this player, but you look at the Sens defense, and you know, moving Chychrun will help, but he's still got Chabot and Sanderson there, and those guys are going to get power play one and power play two time. But Kleven's going to get a lot of minutes, and you know, while we're not looking at a top power play, he's big, he's mobile, he's physical, he's going to play a lot of minutes and get you a lot of hits and block shots. So in leagues that have multi-category, he's going to be really good for filling those last two categories of hits and blocks for you. And that's kind of a strategy that I go with. I look for those stats particularly from my defensemen, and in some cases offense is a bonus. The real question with the value there is how much is the contract, right? If they're making $8 million and all they're doing is getting you a more than a hit and a block a game, then that's not really good value for your cap space. But on an entry level contract, that'll be just fine. Thanks. I'll take that all day long. So I think that's what we're looking at with Tyler Kleven.
You were talking about how he's going to hit and block a lot, and I would just push back on that a little bit, because his per 60 stats in the AHL suggest that he does not do that a ton. He's 70th percentile for hits and 50th for blocks. So that's based on per 60. If he gets a ton of minutes, will that be a bit above? Sure. You know, so if he's getting like 22, 23 minutes, then yeah, then him doing that at per 60, a little bit above average, is going to be pretty good. But I just don't know that he's going to be like Chychrun level in terms of his perf, you know, that was like incredible. But, you know, we'll see. He may play differently in the NHL too, but that's just kind of where he's been at in the AHL so far.
Yeah, I think that'll be the role that's prescribed to him in the NHL. So hopefully he does it if he wants to prove me right and have a long career with high minutes. He's going to have to do those things. Let's move on and talk about the New York Rangers. They had an average score of 61.6, with a top-ranked player being Gabe Perreault, who scored an 8. You had Brendan Hoffman and Will Cooley in there at 6.9 and 6.4, followed not too far behind by a couple of 5s, Adam Sikora, Zach Jones, and Dylan Garand. And then it starts to decline after that. After the 6, you go into Bryce McConnell-Barker, Brett Bedard, Matt Robertson, Ryder Korzak, Adam Emstrom, and blah, 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 blah. So the two guys we're going to talk about are nicely in the middle there. And I'll let you lead off. And I think first up is Zach Jones, right?
I also feel like we've been talking about Zach Jones for a long time, but he's someone who's been, he's been interesting. You know, he was drafted back in 2019, third round pick, 68th overall. He was drafted out of the USHL. And he was also a guy who went to college. That was a long time ago, but he had really strong production. He was really offensive. A lot of it was how far can his defense come along? And he's really worked on that. He's had some really strong production in the AHL with Hartford, and he's seen a reasonable amount of NHL games. In fact, he's probably going to graduate this list pretty soon in terms of his games played. He had 31 with the Rangers this season. Mostly his defensive impacts were kind of neutral, like his expected goals against were kind of low, but his Corsi against was good. His expected goals 4/60 was a little bit low, but his actual events were positive. He didn't really do too much on the power play, but you know, he's someone who he's offensive, and you know, I think that as long as his defense can come along enough, then that's really a positive for him. I forgot to mention Zach Jones, average of 5.4 on our list. He's the fifth prospect. P, you had him, we're both higher than the average. You had him at 7, I had him at 6. Dauber and Aaron have him at a 4, so pretty low. There are some other rankers, Curtis, Ben, Matt, Mark, who were similarly high. I think one of the factors here is Eric Gustafson is gone. He was, Zach Jones didn't play as much. I think one of the main reasons he didn't play as much is because there were so many capable defensemen ahead of him. Now, you have to mention that there were guys who just breezed past him on the depth chart, like Braden Schneider, Keandre Miller. So those guys, I mean, if he really was that good, he should have been able to get more playing time than those guys, which didn't happen. It sounds like the Rangers are still trying to move Trouba. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But either way, even if it stands where it is now, Zach Jones has a much better chance this season than he ever has of getting a really good role, especially with how much he's worked on his offense, on his defensive game. And, you know, looking at some of his other contributions, he does shoot a lot for a defenseman. He doesn't really hit or block, so he's basically someone who you're hoping shoots and gets power play time, because without that, like second power play time, obviously he's not taking Adam Fox's spot. So how much production can he really get at even strength or on the second unit power play? It might be a bit tough. I think a lot of us have kind of hoped for a while that Zach Jones goes to a different team, because I think he could be a reasonable, you know, power play quarterback. He's definitely not a top line guy though. So if he was going to run a top power play, it would be more from like the second or third pairing kind of thing, or more likely just a second power play kind of guy. So I still do like him. I think he has reasonable upside. I think his defensive game has come a long way. He's closer to average, which is good enough when your offense is as good as his can be. He's shown some really good flashes, but there's still some question marks there. Pete, what do you think about him? You were even higher than I am, so you must be even higher and more excited.
Yeah, a little bit. The way I'm reading this, if I look at their depth chart and the roster, as of now, he's a top six full-time NHL player. He's on the roster. They've given him a job. Unless something changes between now and October when the season starts, if they, you know, sign some free agents or make some trades or whatever, it's his job to lose. So I'm a little bit surprised that his average rank is below 6 as a 5.6. The question for me is no longer, is he going to be an NHL player or can he play in the NHL? I think he's established that. Now the question is, what kind of role can he play? Can he be a top pairing offensive defenseman and get some significant power play time even? Probably not. You know, I don't think his track record at the pro hockey level has kind of shown that's in his arsenal, but I can see him playing 60 plus games this season, and I can see him banking 30 points on the way. And 30 points from a defenseman is not insignificant, depending on where you draft him. And you should not have to draft him in the first 5 rounds of your fantasy draft. You know, this is a player who should be available in later rounds, and I think you can get really good value out of this player drafting him later on. And you know, I think we might be looking back at the end of the season and saying, so who are some guys that you drafted that you really hit on? Zach Jones could be one of those guys. You know, like you said, we've been talking about him for a while and waiting and waiting and waiting. The door is as open, as wide as it's ever going to get for him. And now it's up to him to, you know, take a big step forward and establish himself in a role where he can do some damage. And Yeah, we'll see if he can do it. It's a possibility. I'm not saying he's a lock for 30 plus points, but the opportunity is there for him to do it. And he should be a pretty easy to acquire player for that kind of potential upside.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I agree that he has the opportunity to, although Drury did go out and sign another guy who could potentially block him. I don't really think he's going to, but there are some defensemen there that have been added. So we'll see. I agree though. I think he's going to have a really good opportunity. And although I would push back slightly on the idea that he's for sure a full-time NHLer because he played 31 games. So is he like for sure like going to play the whole season next season? I don't know. Like probably, but the Rangers are such a good team. They're not going to stand for any subpar play, and they might just, you know, put someone else in that role, you know.
Yeah, like I said, things can change between now and the start of the season. Free agency and trades are happening, and they go out and acquire two more guys that are NHL contracts, that could definitely push him down. But if they don't do that, then he still has to earn the role, right? Like, kind of won the favor of the team a little bit by being a good sport, being a healthy scratch a lot last year, and then playing well when he had the opportunity, but they certainly favored Gustafson last season. He's gone now, so we'll see what that does for Jones.
All right, let's talk about the other guy.
Yeah.
Dylan Garand. He is a goalie. That's important to know. His average rank was 5.3. He's the third best that we ranked total. You and I, though, are both higher on Garand than the rest of the team. We had him at 7, and the average being 5.3 means obviously we pumped him up quite a bit. There was some Aaron and Hayden had him at a 3. Mark had him at a 4, so that brought him down a lot. There are a few other people that had him at 6s. We were the only two that had him at a 7, so pretty high on Garand. He was drafted back in 2020 out of the WHL, had some really good seasons there. I think a lot of people would probably remember him most for his really strong 2021-22 World Junior Championship for Canada, where he helped them win gold. So that was a really big feather in his cap. After that, he turned pro. His first, it hasn't gone like super well in the AHL. Some of his numbers are a little bit subpar, but overall, that isn't necessarily indicative of his upside. I was just looking at Hockey Prospecting, and he kind of looks more like a NHL backup kind of situation. Backup 1B, I think, is kind of where he is. Robert Esch is a really reasonable comp for him. But overall, I think, and obviously the Rangers don't need any other goalies in the system with Shesterkin going to be the default guy forever. But, you know, you never know. He could get traded. But I also think, you know, he has been in the AHL, so he's close. The proximity is there. Does he get an opportunity to play this season? I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, Quick obviously has one more year under his contract for this season. And I think he was fine last year, but, you know, he's 38. He'll be 39 this year. So it's also completely possible that Quick just completely falls off a cliff and they bring Dylan Garand up. And then all of a sudden there's some pretty interesting value there, because it would only take a little bit of a injury for Garand to be playing then. But what do you think? What is your read on this situation? Why are you excited about him, Pete?
Yeah, kind of on the same page as you there, pal. He's got 2 seasons in the American Hockey League, and he's been good, but not great there. The more concerning part about his American Hockey League play is his stat lines are pretty stagnant. So, you know, you like to see him improve a little bit. I don't play that close attention to the Hartford Wolfpack, so I don't know if they've been good or bad or consistent as a team, and if his play is just indicative of the team's play. It's kind of hard to be, you know, improving your goaltending stats if the team gets worse. So I'm not sure what the context is there. But looking down the future at the depth chart possibilities, you know, Shesterkin and Quick are there right now, as you pointed out, but they're both UFAs after this season. And Quick is likely going to retire. Shesterkin is likely going to re-sign. You know, I think that the Rangers were able to hold on to Lundqvist. I think they're going to do the same thing with Shesterkin. They'll offer him plenty of cash to stay. And by all accounts, he seems happy there. So that would open up an opportunity for Garand to either this season, if Quick falters, or next season, if Quick retires, to move into a nice little cozy NHL backup role where he plays 20 games a season behind Shesterkin. So what kind of fantasy value are you getting with a backup goalie behind Shesterkin? Probably pretty decent. You know, the Rangers are a good team, but you don't want him to be your first drafted goalie, that's for sure. So, you know, I think our 7 score might be slightly high because he certainly has an NHL potential here, right? Like, I think we're talking about a goalie that's got a really good path towards playing in the NHL. I just don't see him having a tremendous fantasy upside. So maybe that's why some of the other guys were a little bit more reserved on their rankings.
Yeah. Can we just relish in the thought here of the New York Rangers going from Mike Richter to Lundqvist to Igor Shesterkin? Like, how insane is that? They haven't had to worry about a goalie for like how many decades now?
Like my whole life. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of envious teams out there.
Meanwhile, other teams are going through like 15 goalies a season, it seems like. So,
right.
Good job, New York. You're doing something right. All right, let's move on to our last team, the Boston Bruins. They're number 22. And for a long time, I jokingly refer to them as the Boston Fabian Lysells. And, well, they're pretty similar to that still. Mathieu Poitras took the top spot from him, but Lysell is still there. Mason Lowry also there. Who we're not going to talk about those three because we're all pretty much in agreement, some slight deviation, but those three are clearly the top. But the next couple, there was some disagreement on. It's probably worth discussing. So we'll start with Georgi Mrkliov. He is the fourth guy. 5.6 is the average. You had him at a 6. I had him at a 3. Aaron is also pretty low here. The rest of the rankers are pretty high on Georgi. He played 4 NHL games this season, was nearly a point per game in the AHL after a strong season last year, now 23 years old. I definitely feel like he'll be in the NHL soon. I'm also pretty confident that he's more of a bottom six guy without much of a points upside. I've watched a decent amount of him, and I really like him. I think he's a strong player. He's a guy who's kind of be a nightmare shorthanded. Like, he can really fly, and he can put defense on their heels. But I just don't know that he's going to score enough for it to be in the NHL level anyways, for it to be super impactful. So that's the part that kind of worries me. In his limited NHL action, he looked a little bit below replacement level, which is not terribly surprising. He did block a lot for a forward, which is kind of cool. But overall, I don't think his bash is going to be super high. So you're kind of banking on a little bit more production for me, for the way I read it. So why are you so excited about Mrkliov? And do you think he can score enough to be a fantasy asset?
Yeah, so I think what makes me score him a 6 is the value, right? So we've discussed this player plenty of times in the past before, and yeah, I'm more bullish on him than you are, that's for sure. But in the last year, I think I've probably actually cooled off on him a little bit, and you're kind of warming up to him. So I think we're starting to meet the middle here. I'm agreeing with you that I think he's going to get some NHL time this season. I think he's going to play more in the NHL than the American Hockey League for the first time in his career. But top 6 is a long shot, like a very long shot. But to my point on the value, he was free money for the Bruins. They signed him as a free agent. And his Fantrax rostership is 31%, which is really low. And he could be free to you in your fantasy league as well. So we're talking about a player you can sign as a free agent, a free top 5 prospect in your fantasy roster that's going to play in the National Hockey League this year. And, you know, he's not going to light it up. He's not going to win the Calder Trophy or anything. But on an entry-level contract, you know, a guy that can fill out one of your bottom roster spots on a, what's the ELC, $950,000 this year? Like, that's pretty good, man. I think there's a lot of value there. He's not going to give you any sort of extra value in peripherals. He's mostly an offensive guy. I think he gets a couple of blocks, but he's not a big hitter and he's not a big penalty minute guy. I don't even think he shoots that much, but you know, for free, yes please. That's why I rank him at 6.
Yeah, so he's gonna play, but yeah, I think we agree he's not a top sixer. He's gonna be middle at best. I think he's more of a bottom sixer, but yeah, he's definitely free money, and I bravo to the Bruins for finding him and developing him, and you know, they need that depth, and I think he's going to be able to provide that.
Yeah, and like his average score is 5.6. That's pretty close to top five in, on almost any team, if you look at our depth charts here. So, I mean, he's certainly a top eight player on any NHL team's depth chart. So, you know, there's it's not great, but he's pretty good.
Yep. I just don't know about fantasy, though. I don't know if he's going to be that valuable. All right, let's move on to the last guy we're going to talk about on this episode, and that is the goalie, Brandon Boosie. He is average 5.1, number five prospect on the list. Pete, you had him at a six, I had him at a five. There were definitely people lower than us, though. Aaron and Ben had him at a four and a three, respectively. Pat was even higher, had him at a seven. Crazy. He was undrafted. He's a 6'4", 227-pound, now 26-year-old, just turned 26, who basically worked his way up from several different places, but USHL, he went to Western Michigan, then Providence, AHL, and he spent some time in the ECHL, and basically he's been in the AHL the last couple seasons. Played, has been back up in the NHL, but hasn't gotten into a game yet. I recently had a couple of conversations with Fluto Shinzawa and Kat Silverman, Fluto of The Athletic and Kat Silverman at Ingle Mag, about him and about this situation, you know, because obviously Omark was there. They traded Omark to Ottawa, which I think helped some things anyways, but they kind of facilitated the cap dump there of Korpisalo. And Korpisalo coming now to the NHL, I've always been skeptical of his ability and his position. Both of them, though, kind of agreed that they could see Boosie kind of passing Korpisalo in camp, and the team maybe reassigning Korpisalo to the AHL, kind of bearing part of that cap hit. I think it's not an unreasonable assumption that Boosie could already be better or play better, certainly in this system, than Korpisalo. So that, you know, if you were thinking, oh, Boosie is now blocked by Korpisalo, you know, maybe not, I think is what I'm trying to say. I don't think Boston's in a position to tolerate any poor goaltending. They're in a win now, competitive window, very good team. And I think it's important to know that Boosie requires waivers to go down. So if they come into camp and he outperforms Korpisalo, then they might just keep Boosie and waive Korpisalo. Anyways, in a cap league, I think it's a no-brainer that I prefer Boosie, but I might just prefer him straight up and in another league too, because of what I said. I think there's some reasonable confidence there. And even if he's not that good, which I personally don't think Boosie is like amazing or anything, but he's in a really good situation with really good teams, both at the AHL and NHL level, that even if he's not amazing, he can put up pretty good numbers and he can, you know, win with the team in front of him. So that's part of what I like. You're looking at his hockey prospecting, he kind of looks more like a backup 1B kind of guy. But we've seen that be pretty good in Boston for some other guys. I think those other guys had more talent than Boosie. But anyways, I think it's a pretty good situation. Pete, you're obviously even a little bit more excited than me. So what is your take on Boosie and the situation?
Well, we did these rankings months ago. Like, these are something that we did in the spring, and it's late summer now. So I'm assuming that you probably had these conversations with Fluto and Kat since then. Yeah. With what you just explained about the dynamic and the post-trade situation with Allmark gone and Korpisalo in now, are you still firm on your five, or do you think that might be a little low given new evidence?
Yeah, I think I might even move him up. I mean, solely based on the opportunity, right? Like, yeah. I still think he's like backup quality, backup to 1B. I still think that's kind of his ceiling, but because of the opportunity, yes, I totally agree that I might rank him a little bit higher, just because like he could very well get 20 to 30 games in the NHL and put up pretty decent numbers at a very reasonable cap hit. And so that's pretty good value.
Yeah, and fantasy too. And you know, the way you laid that out there, I you know, I went to do my prep work and you'd already done yours, and I read your notes and I was like, huh, that's really interesting. And you know, now, like I said, this all happened since we did our original rankings. I think you're spot on here, dude. I'm not a big Korpisalo fan either. This is going to be his fourth team in three seasons, so NHL teams aren't a big fan of this guy either, but he is under contract. That's a huge red flag, that many teams in such a short term. And the fact that Boosie needs to clear waivers to be sent back down, you know, this is all contingent on him playing very well. in training camp and preseason. They'll give him plenty of opportunity to do so. And he's played really well in Providence. So he's proven himself, I think, at the professional level to be a legitimate goalie. And I think it's way more likely that Boston, if they have to expose one of these guys to waivers, that it's going to be Korpisalo, and they won't be sad if he gets claimed. They'll be like, oh, we just inherited $3 million in cap space. Sweet. Because you know he was a throw-in in the deal, right? Like, that was part of the terms of the trade that they had to take him back in order to do the Ullmark deal. So I think they'd be quite happy to put Korpisalo on waivers if they were 100% confident that Boosie could carry the mail as the backup and play 30 games in the NHL. You know, you don't want to burn Swayman out, but Swayman's a young goalie too. So that would be two pretty young goalies. So I can see why they're okay having a veteran in the system. But, you know, when it comes time to choose two goalies and put one on waivers, I would not be surprised if Boosie's the guy that they hold on to.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he's on his entry level contract, too, if I'm not mistaken, still. So, like, that is a sweet, sweet, sweet value for your fantasy roster as well. So that wraps up the Boston Bruins players that we ranked below Merkulov and Boosie, because we kind of got deep on those guys. They're just ahead of John Beecher and John Farinacci. Jakub Lehko comes in next, and Oscar Jelvik. They got a bunch of guys who I think are really interested in their bottom five here. Michael DiPietro, remember him, Vancouver Canucks, Windsor Spitfire. He had a pretty good run in the OHL. Riley Welsh, Frederick Brunet. You're pretty high on Brunet. I'm pretty sure you ranked him a lot higher than everyone else. Andre Gasseau, I liked what I saw from him in the Beanpot tournament. He's a big center. So, you know, they got some guys that are intriguing in the sub four or sub three score range down there that, you know, if you've got a really, really deep league, they might be worth putting on your prospect watch list or squirreling away for a season to see how they do. Some of these guys are turning pro next year, and see how they fare out for the coming season, you know? All right. That's pretty much it. Any final thoughts or words, Victor?
Well, just that, you know, we did, Pietro, which I agree, interesting case. If you want to hear more, go check out Fantasy Hockey Life, where I talked to Cat Silverman about him and some of the other goalies. Definitely some interesting situations there. And yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the FHL series that you're going through right now, where you have a beat writer on and you're talking about each team's offseason plans and drafts and free agent signings and opportunities and whatnot. So if you're not listening to that, then what are you waiting for? Go get out there. But that's another show. Thanks for listening to this one, Dobber Prospects Report number 66. If you want to give us some feedback or chat with us or give us suggestions on the show, you can follow us on Twitter or X at @DPR_show, at Farling, Victor Nuno 12, and Sabarin 91. We're part of the Hockey Pod Net, so follow them on Twitter. There's lots of other great podcasts on there that you can listen to as well. If you don't already, subscribe to us. Share us, like us, give us a 5-star review. And if you do all that, then we'll see you on the next episode. Until then, keep your stick on the ice.
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
Let's do that hockey.